CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to help me understand the surprising new presentation by the President of the United States, the Prime Minister of Australia, and the Prime Minister of Great Britain, a strategic alliance or partnership, or what you'd have to say at this point, arrangement, to deal with the threat of the Wolf Warriors and the PRC. It's called, ungainly, AUKUS. It stands for Australia, United Kingdom, and the U.S. I go immediately to Parliament, where in these last hours, sharp remarks by the Prime Minister and by some members of his party and the opposition about this arrangement. This would look to be global Britain, but I read from the London Times, the former Prime Minister, Theresa May, asked Boris Johnson in the Commons what the implications, quote, of the pact would be in the scenario that the UK is dragged into a war. Gregory, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. The UK is now voicing, through the person of the former Prime Minister, doubts, hesitations, fears of this alliance. Is this a way for Great Britain to be dragged into a war with China? Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, it wouldn't be dragged into a war with the PRC any more than the existing arrangements. The reality is that the last people to want to create a war are the Chinese leaders, including Xi Jinping, because Xi Jinping knows that getting into a hot war, whether it's over Taiwan or East China Sea Islands or whatever, is the kiss of death. That's the finish for the Communist Party of China. The minute he goes into a war with Taiwan, Japan gets involved, and if Japan gets involved, the United States gets involved. That becomes untenable. But at the same time that that happens, India would then start its attacks across the Tibetan region below the Tibetan Plateau and across Pakistan and into Afghanistan and up to Tajikistan. This would cut off China completely. So the last thing that Xi can afford is a war. What he needs, though, is to look very, very strong, domestically particularly, while he manages the economic decline of the PRC in such a way that he retains control of the Communist Party and the Communist Party retains control of the state. The wealth and strategic capability, foreign adventures, all of that, totally secondary to him staying in power and controlling the landmass. So from that point of view, Theresa May's jingoistic, panic-driven nonsense, which is typical of her, is totally by the way, because the UK is not going to be coerced into a war any more than it is already engaged in that war. And we have to look at war today, as the Chinese do, in that it is not a kinetic operation. It is a case where you use the armed forces to project image, prestige, power, but you don't actually fight them, because if you fight them, the chances are that you'll have a problematic outcome. So basically, what the UK is doing is reasserting its position in the Indo-Pacific to impact its authority, its prestige, and therefore its trade. There was never any doubt that if the United Kingdom left the European Union, its only option for prosperity was to return to becoming a global trading nation, and to become that global trading nation on the scale which is required necessitated that it project power, influence, and prestige back around the world, and particularly into the Indo-Pacific, where Britain wants to get engaged not only with Australia, New Zealand, and so on, and Japan, but with the whole Pacific trading bloc, which is now emerging as a coherent form.
We go immediately to Canberra. There was drama here. Yes. The cabinet was called to emergency session, either virtually or in person, by the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, to announce the AUKUS alliance. What does it mean for Australia? Chiefly, let's do some hardware here. For some time, Gregory, you've instructed me that the acquisition of French conventional submarines was expensive and didn't necessarily fill the gap created by the aging out of the Collins-class submarines of the Royal Australian Navy. this new presentation, as I understand it, does fill that gap with U.S. and U.K. technology and submarines until Australia can build its own nuclear-powered fleet. Is that correct? And what advantage is there for Australia here?
Well, that's been the suggestion. Firstly, it does allow the Prime Minister to do, as he did in the last 24 hours, to cancel the program to buy the French Longfin Barracuda Block 1A submarines, which were ludicrously expensive. These are the things which he was going to spend to get 12 vessels, about $180 billion or $200 billion. Dollars and not get the vessels for 10 to 20 years. So it was a non-starter for a long time. But now he's out of that. And of course, the immediate result is that the French government is absolutely furious. Mind you, they should have expected this a long time ago. They've seen the build-up of opposition to this contract in Australia. So now that's gone. But Australia will have a submarine gap when the Collins class finishes its refits and finishes its life cycles and so on. So they need something. So what we'll see are probably US Navy and Royal Navy nuclear attack submarines based in near Fremantle in southwestern Australia on the Indian Ocean to fill the gap and to provide, if you like, long-range power projection into the Indo-Pacific from there. Bear in mind that I think the second largest U.S. Navy submarine base in World War II was in Fremantle. So this is going back to history. And, of course, the start of the Royal Australian Navy's submarine capability came with a deployed squadron of old conventional submarines, which were based in Sydney in those days. And that Royal Navy squadron later gave way to an Australian squadron of submarines, the Oberons, which then were replaced by the Collins. The interesting thing is that this harkens back to a well-known format, but Australia still needs to find a new replacement for the French submarines and the Collins. Whether or not this will be a nuclear vessel, it remains open. The Prime Minister has hinted that it would, and this would open Australia for the first time to building peaceful nuclear power generating stations, which would provide the technology, of course, so that the Australians could, for the nuclear industry, could service nuclear submarines in Australia. But Australia needs conventional submarines as well as nuclear submarines. The nukes are not good in the shallow waters around the ASEAN islands, around Indonesia, Philippines and the like. So the Alliance and Australia need conventional submarines as well as nuclear submarines for deep, long-range strike operations. But this has really given Scott Morrison a chance to end that ridiculous contract which he inherited from the previous government.
We go to the U.S. advantage. The Australia-U.S. alliance was born in 1941-42 of necessity. Does this reawaken that alliance? Because there have been questions these last years about whether Australia, given its dependence upon Chinese mercantilism.
No, it doesn't do any more for ANZUS. The Australia-New Zealand-US alliance, because that actually never diminished in its cornerstone importance to Australia as its strategic alliance. But what it does do for the US is it puts New Zealand out of the equation in the short term, because New Zealand is at the moment somewhat unreliable. They're very anti-nuclear, and what the US needed was, with Britain, a capacity to inject greater nuclear-powered naval capability into the region. Now, what it also does for the United States, though, is that it brings Washington back to a centrality of alliance structure with Australia, but it means that the US in this new arrangement is primus inter pares, the first among equals. It is no longer the dominant, bullying overlord of the alliance. It literally is stepping back from that capacity and giving a lot more weight to Australian capability and participation and British, so that essentially Biden has regained some credibility, but has pulled the United States back from being the sole responsible major power for the security of the Indo-Pacific in facing the People's Republic of China, ignoring for a moment the Indian participation there.
Yes, let's get to India. We're speaking of the arrangement now announced, alliance, Australia, UK, the US. This is three large players, which I've been told by the Prime Minister of Great Britain to describe as maritime democracy. It's a wonderful term. I will borrow it from Boris Johnson. However, we turn to the other alliance in the region, the Quad, when we come back. India, Australia, Japan, and U.S. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.